Alright, welcome to another program of Out and About. Now, recently I visited the Columban Missionary Residence in Dalgan Park, situated near Navan in County Meath. And here's who I got talking with there.
Cyril Lovett is my name. And my family would have Kerry links, and Dad would be from the Gaeltacht area, and Mum from Ramore. So I grew up mainly in County Cork, apart from initial 6 months in Westport. And
when were you born, Cyril?
When was I born? 1939.
1939. Wow. So in other words, the year the World War II broke out, you came on the scene.
6 months before the World War, yes.
Cyril, okay, your parents are from the Kingdom, but you kind of grew up in first born Westport, but then moved to Cork, because your father was a school inspector.
Yeah, Bantry, and then Fermoy, which I was always glad of. Because though the family eventually, when I was 15, 16, moved to Cork City, Fermoy was a town with 4,000 population approximately. And for boys growing up anyway, it was ideal, because the different sections of the town would have had different teams, and we would have played the various games during the season all over the years. There was a river there. There were old castles. It was as close to an ideal place, I think, for a boy to grow up. It was a garrison town also. And then I went to St. Colman's for Moy, which was a diocesan seminary. But there were always some vocations from it, but most people attended it for their secondary education. I was attracted to priesthood. Our house would always have been... Dad had many friends among the clergy and sisters. They were always welcome visitors. And I was attracted to it. But I was, from an early age, I was sure that I didn't want to be a priest in Ireland. Mainly because I just thought that we had too many priests already. We would have had four priests in Fermoy, you know. It's a small town. And a couple of chaplains as well. So then on a retreat during my last year, in St. Colman's, I came across a copy of the Far East. And it's interesting that just reading through it...
The Far East, which is the Columban Missionary magazine that went out, a monthly magazine that went out to most... We would have gotten my school when I was young, the CBS and the Thai, and you got the magazine, and continue, please, Syria.
Yes, so... And I remember reading in an article on the Philippines that... most of the parishes there had a minimum of 12,000 people. And I was saying, one priest among 12,000 people, now that sounds more like the kind of place where I'd like to work. So I went to Dalgan, and fairly typically, I suppose, only when I arrived in Dalgan did I find that there were two others from my class in St. Colman's, who were also in Dalgan.
And Dalgan is the Columban Missionary Seminary, situated where we're doing this interview now, in County Meath.
In County Meath, yes. So Dalgan was an interesting place, and I suppose in some ways it was ahead of its time, because not only did we have the usual philosophical and theological studies, but also the basement area was developed into a series of workshops. And I suppose the thinking behind it was to enable you pretty well to care for yourself, to learn a bit about everything. So you had a printery, you had a bookbindery, you had a tailoring shop, you had later on, I believe, mechanics, car mechanics, picture framing, and the usual work in around the grounds. So you were kept occupied, and there was a nice spirit in the place, generally speaking. So I have happy memories of my 7 years in Dalgan.
7 years, wow, yeah. And kind of, you would have done a lot of academic spiritual studies, I presume, as well, yes, sir?
Oh, absolutely, yes, that was the main curriculum. The other was just on the side, yes. But, yes, I would have been a kind of an earnest student. So, after ordination, I was the only one in the class that was sent for further studies. And at the time, the Columbans were working in England and were looking for vocations and support. And they had to get the permission, of course, of the bishops of England. And the idea was that maybe we could do something in return for that. And anyway, a former superior general had the idea that we would open a boarding school for English boys. And initially it was located in Yorkshire, and the class ahead of me were sent to various English universities to prepare to be teachers there. Now, we didn't do things by half. The man who was destined to be the superior headmaster went to Ampleforth, and he spent a couple of years under Basil Hume, who at the time was the abbot of Ampleforth.
Learning Basil Hume, who later became Cardinal Basil Hume, a famous religious man of England of the 20th century.
That's right, indeed. And a lovely character. But so the headmaster did his apprenticeship in Ampleforth, and four of us were sent to Cambridge or Oxford. I ended up in Oxford. There was a small college there run by the Capuchins called Greyfriars, but I was told to study geography. And I said, but I didn't even do geography in my leaving cert. And they said, you will study what you are told. That was the period at the time, which I did. Now, for 3 years in Oxford, it was hard work because most of the students there were A-level students from the various top schools. And however, in retrospect, it was a great gift. Precisely because no matter what you studied, it was always studied in reference to related subjects. So, human geography, which is what I studied, started with geology and stratigraphy, and then went on to social anthropology and to a little bit of town planning and physical and social geography. So it was fascinating, but mainly fascinating precisely because of the methodology. You see, every two students had a tutor. So there were lectures, and I would have conscientiously attended lectures, but it was up to yourself whether you attended or not. But you're meeting with the tutor once a week, whereupon he gave you a reading list for an essay. And you spent your time reading up those books, putting them into words, and you read back your essay at the following meeting the following week. It was excellent training for absorbing, for fast reading, for learning to express yourself above all in writing and getting to the heart of the matter. So these, in retrospect, are the gifts that I am grateful to Oxford for.
What year were you there? What years? 3 years in Oxford, in Greyfriars College there, run by the Capuchins. What years were you there?
In 1965 to 67.
An exciting time to be in Oxford, you know what I mean? It was all happening. Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, the famous Beatles, all of that, the swinging 60s.
That is true. And Oxford was a very interesting place. There was visits from the Doyle-Carte Opera and other opera companies. There were plays. I played a bit of golf. And it was, I know that our house there in Greyfriars, where we stayed, was just beside, was on Iffley Road, and was beside the running track on which the first 4-minute mile was run. Yeah.
Wow.
Which would be around the same time also. I've forgotten his name. Anyway, so it was an interesting place, but a place that put us under huge challenge and strain, and I was happy when it finished. I was even happier because the project for which we were preparing collapsed, was closed 3 months before I finished. And that, I said, a fervent prayer to the Lord and thanksgiving. And I was assigned, first of all, to Fiji, because in Fiji they were working with the British system of education, and they had a training college there, among other things, and I think I might have been destined for that. But within 6 weeks, that appointment was changed, and I was appointed to the Philippines. And I happened to be one of three brothers, all Columbans. Now, the Columbans must be surely famous for having 9 sets of 3 brothers, 36 sets of 2 brothers in the Columbans. And whenever anybody remarked about this to me, I would say, yes, but after all, it began with the 12 apostles, which are 2 sets of brothers in it, in the 12.
That's a good way of bringing it back to the origins.
That's right. So,
so you, yourself and your 2 brothers are in the Columbans, you're all missionaries, and you, as one of those brothers, is now heading out to the Philippines. It's 1968. What happens?
Well, not only that, but my second brother, Brendan, who was 2 years behind me, he was sent to study in Dublin in UCD, and that put an extra year on his. There's 2 years between us normally, but so he did his degree there in philosophy. And the result was that when he was ordained and ready to go to the missions, we travelled together. We were both sent to the Philippines. Now, he was sent to the north and I was sent to the south.
How did you travel there, sir?
We flew to the United States because I didn't have a visa for the Philippines. It hadn't come through, and the suggestion was, well, we'll have it sent to Los Angeles, so you make your way across the States. So that's what we did.
Happy days.
Indeed.
I'd say it was an adventure of a lifetime, crossing the States. How did you get across? Was it train, bus, or what?
Plane and train. And it was interesting, but we arrived in San Francisco, it must be at least 6 weeks before the visa arrived. I mean, you always hoped it would come early, it come fast, and you weren't in holiday mood, really. You wanted to get to the missions. So I spent 6 weeks in San Francisco and made good friends there, but very anxiously waiting for a visa. And it was nice that Brendan was with me at that time. So we went to the Philippines together by air. We passed by Japan, and I met some of my colleagues. not my classmates, none of my classmates were sent to Japan, but we had an interesting visit to Japan, an extraordinary country. And then we arrived in the Philippines, and my first impression of the Philippines, we flew in there at 2:30 in the afternoon. I came to the door of the plane to be met with a blast of heat from the tarmac that I shall never forget. So and of course we were dressed in wool suits from, if they weren't quite adapted to the climate. Anyway, we were assigned, he was assigned to Luzon, the Northern Island, I was assigned to the Southern Island of Mindanao, and we went our separate ways. We would meet once a year, usually on holidays, and sometimes the three of us would get together when Aidan arrived three years later.
And for those of you who've just tuned in, I'm Paul Wright, and you're listening to Out and About. Thus far in the programme, I've been talking with Cyril Lovett, a Columban missionary priest, who in the year 1968 went to work as a missionary on the southern Filipino island of Mindanao. So just what was it like arriving as a missionary into the Philippines in 1968? Cyril Lovett.
Well, hugely different. Different languages, different islands. I'm sure that the people in the north would consider themselves more sophisticated than Mindanao, where really had been occupied by the Muslims. And it was only in the post-war years that the Cebuanos, the people from the Midlands, the Middle Islands, went south looking for land. And, of course, this was resented by the Muslims, because they felt it was their territory. And that set off series of petty wars and skirmishes that had really had gone on since the arrival of the Spaniards.
That's going back. So we're talking about three centuries in the making.
That's right. And after the Spaniards, the Americans during the war, yes. Until the Philippines received their independence eventually.
Post-World War II.
Post-World War II, correct. It was very interesting. Lovely people. I considered the Filipino people to be the most sensitive people that I have ever encountered in all my travels.
Really, sir? Why would that be now?
Well, they are, I think, part of their gift is to be hospitable, is to be gentle, is to be sensitive by nature. But unfortunately, there is also a factor of being colonized. They were colonized, first of all, 300 years of the Spanish, and then 6 years or more of the Americans.
That was a vicious war. I mean, the Americans come in, a Spanish-American war of the late 1890s. Spanish Empire loses Cuba, loses the Philippines, Americans take over, and there's a vicious war of conquest by the Americans. But freedom doesn't come to the Philippines. Instead, it's new colonizer, America, and not a pretty picture.
Not a pretty picture, and don't forget, there is also the invasion by Japan.
In the 1940s, with the outbreak of war.
Yes, indeed, which the veteran members of the Columbans there had lived through, because they'd stayed on with the people, taken to the hills with the people, lived with the people, very close to them, and the people never forgot that. So, anyway, one of the disadvantages of being a conquered people is that, and you saw this particularly in the Philippines, that they were inclined to focus on you and what you wanted. So if you asked a question, the answer was posed in terms that would be pleasing to you. So it was very difficult to know what they were really thinking. The second thing is that, being a gentle people, the one thing that was totally forbidden was anger. And this is partly because when they got angry themselves, they were liable to kill. Now, this would be very rare, but the phrase to run amok, A-M-O-K, comes from the Philippine language, and it was developed to characterize what happens when this killing rage hits somebody and they kill without distinction. So anger was considered a huge danger. The idea of an Irishman losing his cool and then 10 minutes later thinking that, well, what odds, that's over now. Well, of course, it wasn't over. For a sensitive people, this was... So it was impressed on us. Whatever else, you be careful, always careful with your anger.
Tread lightly. You've been warned.
Exactly. But, as I say, a gentle people, a people anxious to learn, a people who had deep faith, and a people who it was lovely to work with them. And I spent...
And sir, what did the work entail? What did you were there now in Mindanao, on the ground, among the people. Yes. What were you doing?
Well, I had four different kinds of work in the 10 years that I spent there. I began as a curate to one great man, Frank McGuinness, in a place called Tabud, and we would provide services for the people. I did also some teaching for the Mercy Sisters who had a high school there, and we would periodically visit the barrios at the outstations, which could be very trying because the roads were terribly poor. And you went by jeep, but the roads, then you got to a stage where even the jeep couldn't travel. And you either went by horse or else you walked. And you could spend, you tried to get there before noon, so you started very early in the morning, before the sun was up, and before the heat of the day. And you would come back bathed in sweat and mud and weary to the world, but grateful. And of course, you were always welcomed so sincerely by the people. And then there would be baptisms and weddings and...
Will you say going out, Cyril? I mean, you know, you're talking about going through, you're going to areas, no electricity. And so this is a, you know, Ireland is a million worlds away, the Western world, the comforts of your own native land, Ireland. And, you know, you're literally in more trying circumstances.
More trying circumstances, yes. That was the physical side of it. And that was the initial difficulty. First of all, the language. Eastern languages are so, so difficult. And we were lucky in that by the time we arrived, a good language school had been established in Ozama City by another Columban who was gifted in linguistics, an American called John Winerney. And so we got a good grounding in the language.
What's the language?
Cebuano of Visayan. And I suppose when we would have studied Latin, Greek, French, and Gaelic, and so automatically you're thinking in a grammatical structure, and that is a mistake, because as was drummed into us, the only way to learn a language that was so different was as a child learns. Just let the sounds in and learn the patterns and it will come. Well, it did come eventually, but for many years I wrote my sermons very carefully, had them checked by somebody else, one of the local people, before I spoke them. And even with that, I would have been conscious of being very concentrated on getting it right, trying to get the message across. Until one day it dawned on me that I was so uptight that the congregation were no longer hearing what I was saying. They were actually looking at the frown on my forehead and thinking, what's wrong with him?
Why can't he loosen up?
Exactly. So at that stage,
these Westerners, they're all the same.
At that stage, the penny dropped and I did away with the written text. I still prepared, but then I spoke to them rather than at them.
And from the heart, obviously.
Yes, yes.
Kind of, so in a way, kind of, Cyril, and we were just talking about this earlier on, you were kind of, you know, it was a huge learning path for yourself, and you kind of nearly felt to look at it, God, I think I'm the one gaining here more than anyone else.
Oh, there was no question of that, yes. And always, you were enriched by the faith of the people. Then I was involved a bit in marriage counselling and marriage enrichment.
And profuse thanks to Cyril Lovett for a great interview. Until our next programme of Out and About, from myself, Paul Wright, bye for now.